views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the hit show, The Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. We have the power. We have the resources. We have the knowledge. We have the intellect. We have the innovation, and we have the heart to create a world based on parity, practical innovation, and potential. This hit show with Claudette Rowe will take us on a journey so we can explore our planet, our global community, and our opportunity for transformation. We need a cultural revolution that allows us to look past political squabbles, lack of humanity, and to what she calls reality resistance. So tune in. This is the Brilliance Ultimatum. And time's up.
This is Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to the Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up, on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience what's going well in the world and the opportunity for transformation that's before us. On the second and fourth Fridays of each month, we have some of the foremost change makers, action takers, and truth tellers helping you re-envision what's possible on our planet and in our world. I'm really excited about today's guest, Deb Matlock. I'm going to introduce Deb in a minute. She and I are actually going to be talking today about how connecting to your natural rhythms, or at what she calls your wild rhythms, is actually an act of contribution. And so I'm super excited to explore this with Deb. Deb Matlock grew up in the mountains of Colorado, and she is deeply committed to nurturing the connection between people, animals, earth, and spirit. For the past 25 years, she has worked as a professional environmental and humane educator and naturalist. And additionally, through her business, Wild Rhythms, she offers shamanic style spiritual guidance, animal communication, and sacred nature connection workshops, as well as retreats. And Deb is passionate about helping people find connection and deep spiritual meaning in their lives and in the places where they live. She also enjoys the academic realm, and she holds a Master of Arts in Environmental Education from Prescott College, and is also pursuing her doctoral degree in environmental studies at Antioch University, New England. Welcome, Deb.
Thanks so much, Claudette. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, me too. I'm so happy you're here. Happy you're here. So, Deb, I know, just for listeners, Deb and I met at a conference in Golden, Colorado about a month ago. And so I've been looking forward to learning more about Deb's work because it's an area that's definitely aligned with my work and culture, but a little bit new to me. So I'm excited to learn. So Deb, just because I'm interested and I'm sure listeners are also, how did you get into this area of work?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I have to go back to my childhood. I grew up here in Colorado, and we spent our summers camping. I grew up with lots of animals. We were always the people that would rescue the dogs, and they, bring home the classroom animal companions for the holidays and all of those sorts of things. I spent my childhood doing all of that. And in that process, what I really discovered was some of my best friends and deepest relationships were not only with humans, but with the non-human world. At the same time, I live in a part of the country where development is incredibly fast, still to this day. And I was also watching landscapes that I loved and played in, getting gobbled up. You become housing developments or strip malls and things. And so as a young person, I didn't really know how to put all that together. But what it did was it manifested in me in a way that said, okay, how do I want to move forward in a way that contributes and potentially helps people see the relationships and the connections, and maybe then we think a little bit more carefully about what we're doing and why we do it.
Mm. Right. So I love that this starts way back in your childhood, right?
First best friend was my dog growing up, and she was my playmate. Where we lived, we didn't have a lot of other kids around, and so I think that was sort of putting the foundation in place. I blame her and credit her all in the same voice.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I led you down the path. Yeah, the path you've been on for 25 years. Wow. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. So, when we talk about, one of the things you talk about is connection to Earth and how important that is. And so when you say connection, what are you really talking about?
I think of connection as a form of relationship, sort of a familiar knowing of who and who lives around us and what it takes to be in our places. You know, so we think about our human relationships. If we have a connection with somebody, we often know a lot about them. We share a lot with them. We understand their needs. We know their strengths and weaknesses. It's that same kind of thing, extending that to the earth and the wildlife living around us. Who's outside our door? What does the land need from us? What are the rhythms and changes that go on? And how can we be active players in making our places the healthiest they can be?
I love that. So this idea of, of relationship and the sense of knowing. That comes
from familiarity and comfort and familiarity. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we, you know, I think I mentioned, I can't remember, I think on the phone or at the conference, you know, I mentioned to you, I have this, we moved at the end of August to a different town. And now we have this family of turkeys that roams around the neighborhood, which is not rural, it's suburban, it's not rural or anything, but it's pretty near. I'm in the Boston area and Boston does a great job of conserving pieces of land. So you'll be in a town with, you know, in the suburbs, but then all of a sudden you're in conservation land. So I think that promotes, you know, having a family of turkeys roam around your,
right,
roam around your neighborhood. And they, you know, as you can see them, we, you know, eating in our backyard and they go to the neighbors. And I don't know if they probably have some sort of pattern, I would imagine. But, you know, it's interesting when I was driving home the other day, in the opposing direction, a bunch of cars were stopped because the turkeys were crossing the road, right? So everyone's coming to the stop to, you know, let them cross and make sure that they're safe. And I find, you know, that's a very, it's important act, but a very small act, right? And what are, you know, I'm sure you've seen tons of this, right? Where animals have been really respected or times when they've been very disrespected. I'm just curious if you could share, you know, a couple examples with us or even one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the most heartwarming moments are like what you just described, where people who are obviously in some place, they've got a time limit, whatever it is, and they'll stop. And, you know, I've seen people do this on highways with a stray dog who needed to get off. There was one median in the middle of the highway, and this dog was stuck there in traffic on all sides. And I came up upon it, and there were already five cars there, already people trying to coax the dog into one of their cars. You know, these are people that obviously had other things to do. Yeah. But knowing that being in that deep connection place and that part of that, living in that community of more than human, they said, oh, I'm stopping right now. I'm stopping right now and helping with this. You know, I've also seen people with putting out their dog fur on the fence for the squirrels and birds to use in their nests. You know, I've got a neighbor who has a big Samoyed, lots of shed hair in the spring, especially, you know, piles of hair, bigger than the dog sometimes. And then she scatters this fur around her yard, and then the birds can come and take it and line their nests with it. And it's just a lovely example of that connection. And like you said, so simple, but so meaningful.
Absolutely. And so what, you know, how can we deepen that? You know, we have connection opportunities probably in all of our backyards, right? How can we deepen that?
Yeah, I think the opportunities are everywhere. Our backyards, outside of where we work, our neighborhood parks. I think one of the most important ways to deepen that is just to have the intention of getting to know who lives here, what do they do? You know, is there a little sparrow that's outside of somebody's office building every day, busily doing, you know, his or her own thing? Taking that moment to just observe and just sort of say, I'd love to see what it is that the bird is doing. Let me spend some time here. Whether it's 2 minutes or an hour or whatever it might be, having that intention to say, I'm going to learn, I'm going to be aware, I'm going to open my eyes to what I might not be seeing and experiencing or hearing, and just saying, this is going to be my focus. It doesn't take extra time. That's what's so cool about it. You can do it rushing to, you know, go to the grocery store and stopping and saying, wow, look at all the birds in this, who are flying through this intersection hunting insects. Instead of red light.
So it sounds like it's a different lens. Right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You can take it to all kinds of levels of depth. But the starting point would be just that conscious, like you said, that different lens, that different perspective. And that just opening up to that awareness.
And it's, you know, so what have you seen change for people when they do that?
That's a great question. I've seen people do everything from slow down a little bit and just feel like they enjoy their life a little bit more. I've seen people go completely a different direction and become very active in their communities and in, say, land conservation projects and things, when they really realize who lives there and what the animals need, sometimes, you know, people wake up and go, wait a second, I'm all on board with us preserving this patch of land and things like that. So I think it can be a personal, it can be on the micro personal level, all the way up to the macro massive cultural change level and everywhere mm-hmm. in between. I think for any person, I know for myself, on any given day, it kind of dances around that spectrum.
Right. From, yeah, like you said, everything from where just I'm going to notice today, right? Even yeah. I'm just going to have a different level of observation or consciousness or awareness, all the way up to what are we doing with our planet, right?
Yeah. And what can I do about it?
And what can I do about the, yeah, what can I do, right, do to keep our planet safe and healthy? Yeah, it's interesting. The other day, I think it was over the long weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, my husband looked out our backyard and said, oh my gosh, there's a cardinal. And so we spent some time looking at that. And there, I don't see a lot of cardinals around here. So that was, it's a pretty unusual sighting. But they're so beautiful. And it was in, like when you said just that moment of stopping, right, to observe and appreciate this yeah. bird. Right. Really beautiful bird in the backyard when, you know, it's winter here, the leaves are gone, right? So there's not much color. So I especially appreciated this cardinal outside. But those small things can make such a difference.
Right. You know, on this yeah. whole big planet and this whole yeah. world, you and that cardinal are sharing space and time together, and noticing that is just truly precious and sacred, I think.
Yeah, it felt that way. It really did. It really did. And I don't think I would have seen it because I was not in that part of the house. So it was really my husband saying, I'll look outside. And I was probably running around getting ready for Thanksgiving. So consciousness was somewhere else. Yeah. So what, you know, one of the things you, and I remember you and I chatted about this, and I was curious to explore it further, right, is this idea of community, including not just people in, you know, our human community, but our non-human community. I think we've started to talk about that a bit, but tell us more about that. You know, we talked about this idea of the non-human voices.
Yeah, I think we often say community and we immediately think people. We think yeah. community centers, we think, you know, public outreach, all of that. But the truth is, all of our communities, no matter where we live, are full of animals and plants and other wildlife and rhythms and seasons. And all of this is actually what creates our community experience. But the humans within, you know, we're a nested community within that and also intimately, you know, connected. So I think when we look around us and say, who else lives here and how are they part of this community too? It goes back to what you said a minute ago about that perception and changing the lens. It makes us look differently and ask different questions, I think.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I think it makes us, I love that. It makes us ask different questions. So we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to dig into this a little bit more. Like, what are the questions we start asking when we look at our community much more holistically? So you're listening to The Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered how you might feel differently if the books were full of her instead of him? What if your history lesson was filled with powerful women leaders and rulers? As a woman, would you feel more empowered? As a man, would you see women differently? I'm Megan Edge. I'd love for you to join me on my radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I hope to see you there.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. This intuitive healer studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425 425- 451-0404.
Your inspiration all day on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We're back on the Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. I am Claudette Rowley, and I'm here with my guest, Deb Matlock, for those of you who are just joining us. Deb is an environmental and humane educator and naturalist. She's also provides shamanic style spiritual guidance, animal communication, and sacred nature connection workshops. I also want to mention to those of us who are new, those of you who are new, listeners who are new to the Brilliance Ultimatum, time's up. When I'm talking about time's up, I'm talking about time is up for us to take action. Time is up for us to be aware and conscious of how we are interacting with our world, the difference we all can individually make and really, really need to make. And that's, you know, what Deb and I are talking about today. So Deb, kind of back to what we were talking about before the break, right? That our communities are our human communities, non-human communities, and that when we start looking at our community as people, animals, and plants around us, we start to ask different questions. And I love how you started to get into this idea of rhythm, right? We look at the rhythm of what's happening around us really differently. So what are some of the different questions we start to ask? What have you noticed?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that to answer that, I'll share a quick story. In my community here outside of Boulder, Colorado, we often have bears that come in, especially in the fall, and are looking for a high calorie intake to get ready for the winter. And as a community, we have to ask ourselves, okay, the bears are part of our community. They live here. We want them here. What do we need to do to honor that and to be respectful of them? You know, does it mean putting our trash out only the morning of the trash pickup and not the night before, so it's not there for them to rummage through and become habituated? Does it mean bringing our bird feeders in and cleaning our barbecue grills so there's not attractant smells and tastes that bring them into our neighborhoods and cause challenges and conflicts? And so I think that's one of the questions is how do we live here with the community that we have? Do we live in a place with bears and mountain lions? Do we live in a place with snakes? Do we live in a place with really hot summers? You know, what does our place, what do the animals and plants ask of us so that we can all live together harmoniously? We live near skunks? Do we live near gophers? And if so, how do we do that in a way that is respectful?
I love that example with the bears, right? So the question is not how do we get rid of the bears, hypothetically, right? It's what, how do we change as humans what we're doing so the bears don't want to necessarily, right?
Exactly.
Come into our area.
Yeah, right. And a piece of that is recognizing the value the bears have, you know,
right.
And around here they're a hugely important part of the ecosystem, and the fact that we have them also indicates a certain level of health in the ecosystem that we can support a top level, you know, large animal like a bear, for example. So yeah, it's not about how to get rid of them; it's how to live all together in a way that we don't attract them into places where it really isn't safe for them or us for them to be.
Right. And I love that, right? Because so often we hear, especially historically, we've heard the opposite, right? How do we get rid of X animal, right? How do we keep them away? How do we whatever? And you're saying actually, wow, what if we look at this differently? How do we all live together harmoniously? So bear is safe, humans are safe, and
exactly.
That having bears around is a sign of health. Wow. Completely different perspective.
Yeah. And I think that conversation goes on a lot with coyotes because they're very adaptable and they live in many, many places. They live in wild wilderness areas in Colorado. And I've seen pictures of coyotes in Central Park and on the White House lawn, for Pete's sake. So
right.
they're very adaptable, you know,
right.
And I think a lot of communities are asking these very questions of how do we appreciate them and live with them in a way that's safe and appropriate for everybody.
Right. Which is a completely different question, right? That's
yeah.
A completely different conversation.
Right.
Yeah. And it feels to me like that's for the general population, I'm sure, I would imagine not in your world at all, but in the general population, that's probably a newer dialogue.
You know, I think it is in some cases. I've done many education programs, you know, bringing these sorts of questions to the table. And what I do find often is people saying, wow, that's a really interesting way to look at this. And this is really exciting. It feels very empowering. There are things that we can do. There are choices we can make if we ask these right questions about our places and the animals we live near that actually can create the world that I think so many of us want, which is a world where we are living in a way that's harmonious. We are moving forward together as communities into a future that isn't human-centered.
Yeah, so for living harmoniously, which I agree, yeah, I think most people do want,
right.
May not know it's possible, may not know how to do it, right? May not be aware.
Right.
But that, and I love what you said, that it's empowering, right? When people say, oh, I hadn't thought of it that way before, it's actually empowering.
I have to say, that's the reason I got into environmental education and humane education was because of that. I started seeing how most of us come to the table with good hearts and good intentions. And it's just a little bit of education and a little bit of support. And then it is empowering because then we can walk away and go, oh my gosh, really? And that, I think, is one of the most hopeful ways to look forward and one of the most powerful ways to envision a changing culture, I think. Look at the education and what we can offer through that.
Yeah, I agree. And so what, you know, when we are more realize that, of course, we're always connected to animals, but when we realize the connection, right? What does that teach us about ourselves?
I think it shows us how we connect, what we prioritize, where our values lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It allows us to find the parts within us that might be a little selfless.
Mm-hmm.
Because we might have to make a different choice. You know, if a robin sets up a nest in the planter box right outside our back door and we have to use the front door for 3 months, you know, and we're willing to do that so those baby robins can be born, mm-hmm. does that allow within us an opportunity to be the truest essence of who we are and who we can be?
That's a great point. Yeah, I love that. Prioritization, values, right? What kind of people are we? So in a way, yeah, what I'm hearing is the animals can be these very, you know, when we start to connect in that way, right, all of a sudden you're seeing them as teachers.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think the role that we play with our amazing knowledge and our incredible potential and abilities, you know, it comes with a little bit of responsibility to say,
yeah,
what can I learn from the world around me? How can I be open and humble in the face of all the rest of the life on this planet? And how can it inform my human experience in a way that is culturally appropriate to move forward and say, let's move into this future, move into a whole different way of being.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. There's this whole different way of being that's available and possible. You know, it makes me, you're talking about really to me, you know, cause I love organizational culture and I do a lot of consulting there. I look through that lens a lot, right? And this is changing the larger culture of how we relate to animals, right? Connect to animals. And to the earth from what, you know, and when we start to do that, you know, I'm thinking about in organizations, right? When you have, it reminds me of when you have a leadership team saying, you know, employees need to change what they're doing. And I say, well, actually, what do you, you know, maybe you need to change what you're doing, right? What are you doing as leaders? How is that impacting the culture? How is that impact, you know, that it becomes a two-way street, right? It becomes a mutual relationship versus a one-way relationship.
I love that. Yeah, the mutual relationship. And I think that's part of this. When we really connect to the animals and the world around us, it also shows us that we are very interdependent. If we're really at it, we can't exist without any of them, without the rest of the life on the planet.
And right. Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's an important piece that is, you know, it's in the vernacular. There's organizations and people doing incredible work. And I think it also needs to be more so in the mainstream conversations in our dinner tables, all the way up to our political conversations. We need to really acknowledge this is the truth.
Yeah. And it is a really, I mean, it's a sad and yet fascinating blind spot that I noticed, right? That we can't exist without the, you know, the animal and plant ecosystem. Yet as humans, we kind of persist as though we can. Some people do, right? And decisions,
exactly.
Political decisions, policies get created. All these things get created as though we're, you know. And I think I may have mentioned to you, I was, you know, I was listening or reading something and, you know, the author was talking about the fact that we, often folks are saying still things like, oh, well, we should, you know, we need to save the planet. And this person said, no, we need to have a place to live. Like, what are you guys not getting? We're not saving the planet because it's a nice thing to do. We need some place to live, right? We need some place habitable for us as humans.
Right.
And that still that I was like, oh my God. And when I heard this was like 6 months ago or 9 months ago when I heard it, I thought, wow, there is still this blind spot as though like, oh, saving the planet's optional. And yeah, it's a nice thing to do for those do-gooder, you know, tree hugger people, right? As opposed to, which is not my viewpoint, right? But I hear things like that, as opposed to, hey, we need a place to live. Like this is much more pragmatic than it's made out to be. And that it's another, those are the two blind spots I really notice a lot. And I'm curious if you hear others that would just be good for us to know about.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. The image that comes to mind is sitting in a meeting talking about water policy and pollution. Everybody in the meeting has a glass of water.
Right.
It has the expectation that they're going to be able to take a deep breath. And right. It's going to, and so, yeah, I think it's not about saving the planet as much as it's about all of life as we know it. And knowing that with us is, our needs are met the same as so much all the rest of life on this planet too. And so yeah. That's our responsibility place, I think.
I would agree, right? That it's all of us as this ecosystem.
Right. And a larger community.
Plants, animals, yeah, all life, right? All forms of life. And that, it's something I'm fascinated by personally and professionally when you start looking through that lens, right? I love to look through lenses because I'm using that word a lot today. What changes? And each of these different lenses, right? People start to heighten their awareness and consciousness. Oh yeah, I hadn't thought about the fact that, we do need a place to live. I haven't thought about the fact that we should, what's our responsibility, right? To the other inhabitants of our planet. And that there's a real richness to that.
Yeah, and how it's all interconnected, which can be one of those cliche words, except for that I think it's a cliche for a really good reason, which is that everything is interconnected. So you can't pull one piece out and not have a domino effect to go through the whole system.
Right. Again, often missed. I mean, to me, that's another blind spot that there, it is a system and it's not this kind of binary, yes or no. Oh, we can just look at this one piece of it like a piece of a machine. Right.
Right.
And it is absolutely, you pull one thread and you have a completely different result.
Exactly.
Which
is overwhelming and also really cool and empowering at the same time. I think it puts us in a place of being able to make some really awesome choices.
Yes, overwhelming and really, yeah, if you can move past that overwhelm or I think just coexist with it, right, then right. you can move into something completely different for yourself and for everyone else around you, including the entire ecosystem. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Deb and I are going to take this conversation forward and also make sure we touch on, in all of this, what is the connection to spirit, right? Which I think is probably the foundation of everything that we're talking about. This is the Brilliance Ultimatum. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Your eternal purpose is calling out to you each and every day. Are you listening? Tune in to Dynamic Destiny Radio with Coach Pete Cafarcio every first and third Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to be your authentic self and live the life that you were destined for. Learn practical tools to discover your purpose and conquer other fears that keep you stuck in a life of mediocrity. Learn more about Coach Pete by visiting PeteCoaching.com.
Are you ready to accelerate your wealth and success? Join Ahana and Daniel from Rise and Be Rich with Cornelia Stephanie on the Millionaire Imprint for Women on Transformation Talk Radio every third Friday, 1 p.m. PST. Step out of lack and into your power of creation. Build and grow your wealth. Create prosperous businesses that make a difference. Visit ahanalara.com/RBR show.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
moment when you realize you've mastered your wellness or that you will never fall off the roller coaster of life? Well, yeah, me either. But I still ride unicorn. I will teach you how to become a mindset master. You will learn how your habits and behavior affect the success of your nutrition and exercise, relationships, organization, and so much more. Motivation doesn't arrive in an email, so stop waiting for it. You have to take action, then motivation follows. I am Coach Peggy Wells. Get out of your comfort zone and recognize the simple truth. We aren't that special. We all have crap to deal with, and we all have a lot more in common than not. I want to spark you into action. We will learn, love, and laugh together. So join me every first and third Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific for Coach Couch and Coffee Radio, where you will learn that being happy and healthy is way more than carrot sticks and squats. I'll talk to you later.
Inspire. Create. Empower. Only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We're back on the Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. I'm Claudette Rowley here with my guest today, Deb Matlock. Deb, before we dive back in and talk about connection to spirit, I'd love to have you share with listeners how they can find out more about you and connect with you.
Absolutely. I have a website, www.wild-rhythms.com. And that's a great way to connect. I've got an email there and all my social media links are there. And I love chatting about all this stuff. So I'm very happy if someone reaches out and just wants to jump on the phone for a little bit or anything like that. So please feel free to check out the website and get in touch.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And Deb does have a really great website. So I encourage folks to check it out and learn more about her work. There's a lot there that you can read, you know, read and digest and learn more about. So before we went to break, we were talking about this idea of interconnection, right? Interconnectedness. And to me, that just seems spiritual. So I'd love to talk with you more about that. You know, what is the connection to, you know, to spirit and all that? And when you think about spirit, like what, how do you define that, Deb?
I think about spirit as our essence, kind of who we are, how we function in the world, sort of the reasons we're here and what is those urges that pull us along our higher path. And I think about spirituality as that dance with the mystery, a larger mystery of what is, why are we here? How do we fit in? You know, what is all that? What does it all mean? And I think one of the things about that that is, I think, really cool is that it is a mystery, and it's been a mystery since the dawn of humanity. And so part of our lives of living in that dance of what is it and what does it mean and how do I fit in, I think is what can lead us on these paths of making these choices of cultural change and nature connection and all of those pieces in a really natural and organic way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it gives you this, it sounds like an underpinning, right? For why one is doing what they're doing.
I think so. Underpinning and overpinning, maybe circular pinning. Yeah, I think, you know, and it's hard for me to picture nature connection and the deep work there without it personally feeling like a very spiritual endeavor. I have to say that. That's definitely something that I know I feel deeply.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I can hear that when you talk about it, for sure. And I think it is, you know, to me, when people get connected at that level to whatever they're doing, whether it's what you're doing, I'm doing, right, anything, there is this, I mean, I think that level of connection is also part of what contributes to our larger cultural change. When I, you know, not just in organizations, but I think societally, right, because people believe in what they're doing so strongly.
I agree, and I think however somebody defines it, whatever their spirituality is, whether it's a formal religion or a personal process, whether it's philosophical or very active or some combination of all those things, I think when we come from that place, we come from that deep place of personal value, personal knowing, and that a little bit of that humbleness and that mystery, that really does, I think, create some exciting opportunities for us to say, okay, what am I going to do with my life and how and why?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what have you seen about how, you know, the spiritual relationship, how does it connect, or how can it be explored, you know, within constraints of our culture, modern culture that is largely not very spiritual, right? We could probably safely say that in most cases. Yeah.
Probably in most cases. I think, yeah, that's part of what makes it so special is that we have to find our way to carve it out in our lives and in our worlds in whatever way works, whether it's again, a personal practice or something, you know, on a larger scale. But I actually think the modern culture can help us do that.
Okay.
You know, I feel like with the challenges and with having to say, well, this is really important to me, I need to create the space, the time, I need to do this thing, whether it's going to church or whether it's volunteering or spending time in writing or meditation or just walking my dogs without my earbuds in, with the sensation, with the focus of I'm gonna be open to the world around me. We have to consciously choose that. Does it then create deeper meaning for us? I don't know. I kind of think it might. So this crazy modern culture of fast-paced and all that might actually, ironically, be a spiritual training support system for all of us.
Wow, that's a fascinating idea. Tell me more about that. This sort of, you know, spiritual support system training. Wow. Training ground.
I think, you know, when we are faced with on a daily basis, perhaps, with maybe things we don't agree with or something that's going on that we wish was different, yet it's the way it is. It's the way things are happening in my town or in my culture or in my workplace. Yet it doesn't sit right with us. It doesn't feel like something we can really deal with. And then we stand up and we say something, or we create a new solution and we offer it to our team, or whatever it is that we do. Those are those moments where we kind of create, you know, our soul gets to be the driver, our heart gets to drive, and we get to sort of create that next best thing, which, when I think about large-scale cultural change, I kind of wonder, does it come from each of us as individuals saying, what is that next best thing that's arising in my heart and in my soul? I really need to act on. I really need to speak about.
So I think of that as a calling.
Definitely.
Yeah, what are you, you know, what are we each called to, right?
Yeah.
And how do we know, you know, when we're feeling that?
Absolutely. And knowing that it can be small, even, you know, I hear people sometimes say, oh, I wish I knew my calling, but I don't really know. But then they spend hours a week working in dog rescue, and it really is rewarding to them, and they are making an incredible difference. And it's like, well, that could be your calling. You know, it's more about that awareness of, is this the right place? Is this what really feels important to me?
I was talking with a friend recently, and we were talking about this idea of, there's the larger calling, certainly, but also this idea of a moment or a short period of time when one's called to something. And she was talking a story about years ago. She was on a train, I forget where she was going, but with her family, kids were pretty young. And all of a sudden, this woman, this mother on the train who had an infant, a baby, like screamed, "My baby's not breathing." And my friend is a physical therapist and has medical background and different things. And so someone told her later, who observed, said that she pushed like two huge grown men out of the way. Like, she got to that baby and she helped and got the baby breathing again.
Wow.
And that someone observing just said, like, she just pushed everybody aside like they weighed 5 pounds, right? Boom, 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 and got over there, like practically climbed over train seats. And she says she heard it and she just acted. She was called in that moment.
Yeah.
It's the person who could help. And I think, you know, that, and I had a similar experience for not saving anybody's life recently, but an organization where I do a lot of consulting, I've been there a couple of years. There was an employee who ended up in a lot of, just had some really severe personal issues that came up that were not really of this person's making, you know, one of those times where things just kind of happen to you, not that you're a victim, but you know, it's outside of your control.
Right.
And you have to respond the best you can. And I ended up doing a couple of things to help this person out. And normally, and I was like, oh my God, am I crossing a line? Is this unprofessional? You know, whatever. But it felt completely right. And as soon as this person's issue was resolved, then it was done. Like, I just went back to being me. That person went back to being them, and it was over, you know? But it was something that I really reflected on. And I was like, oh my gosh, I was called as the person to help this person out. Yeah.
I think that is such a beautiful illustration of when we live in that deep connection and that sense of community being so large, and we are aware and we walk around with that intention of being part of everything, and we're open to that. You know, that's the kind of stuff. That's the dog on the highway needing rescue. That's the person who dropped their bag of groceries. It's also maybe somebody chooses to run for office in their community because they really feel strongly about making a difference or in some kind of leadership role. I think it's a beautiful illustration of something that can happen on a large spectrum. A from the little moment of taking the spider outside that nobody's ever going to know about you and that spider, mm-hmm. something that maybe has a larger impact, but I don't think it's any more or less important than taking that spider outside.
Right, because of the ripple effect, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what happens, you know, what happens as we move from one thing to the next? Yeah, I think it's hugely important. So I love this idea of calling, you know, certainly a larger calling, right? But then there's the moment-to-moment calling, right? The time you feel, yeah, you feel called to help that person pick up the groceries. Because right. we all know how frustrating that is, right? Or hold the door for somebody who's on crutches, even small things like that. You know, you see them coming and you wait and hold the door because you know they're going to have a really hard time doing that themselves. Go ahead.
It's like the random act of kindness kind of movement that was such a big deal a few years ago. To me, that felt like such an incredibly spiritual movement of empowering all of us to be our best selves.
Mm. Absolutely. And, you know, I think, you know, part of being that best self, I mean, I'm intrigued by a notion you talk about, which is discovering your own rhythms, right? You know, this idea of your, you know, I love the name of your business, right? Wild rhythms. And so what, you know, when you talk about wild rhythms, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about what is it that makes us tick? You know, okay. do we need to do our best work at night or we best work in the morning? Mm-hmm. Is there a certain season that we feel like we are really ready to be out in the world manifesting our work that way? Or is there a time of year where we really want to be kind of in a cocoon and that's our time to do reflective creative work? Is there an amount of time we can sit at the computer versus getting up? Some people can do that for hours and they're fine. Other people, it's, you know, 20 minutes and they've got to go run around the building. You know, their rhythm is just more movement, more kinesthetic. I think that, you know, one of the ways we can look to figuring out what our rhythms are is simple observation to start with. In our ideal world, in our ideal day, what would that look like?
Mm-hmm.
Take away all of our responsibilities for a second and just say, how much sleep would I get? How often would I eat? How much rest would I have? Would I be out in the world more, in more? And then when we know that for ourselves, then we look at our life and say, okay, how can I pull pieces of that in? Because it's really hard to live those ideal days every day. Of course, we've all got families and obligations and jobs and responsibilities. If we know what those rhythms are, we can sort of be proactive in pulling them in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's something that I think a lot about actually personally also, because I'm one of those people that can't sit for very long and has to run around the building, so to speak, right? Yeah. All right. But I'm in, you know, jobs where that's usually not necessarily possible. But I think this is so important. What makes us tick, and it reminds me of years ago, I had a colleague and friend I actually didn't know for very long. I think one of those people that just comes into your life for a short amount of time, right? And then leaves, which happens. And she said something I've never forgotten and I have written down, which is, let me just collect my thoughts on what it is, her wording that she used, which was, never doubt that what's moving through you is a form of intelligence.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that amazing? Never doubt that what's moving through you is a form of intelligence. And what she meant was your emotions, right? Your thoughts, your ideas, your feelings, whatever it is, as opposed to doing what at least I know I sometimes do, which is, I think a lot of us do. Oh my God, like what, you know what? That's not that big of a deal. Why am I making that such a big deal? Or whatever, right? Talking myself out of something that actually maybe just because it is a big deal because it is, right? Or whatever is happening. That never doubt that what's moving through is a form of intelligence, I think is a really fascinating way to move through the world. So I'd love to explore that a little bit because I think that very much aligns right with what you're talking about. I'd like to explore that a little bit more when we come back from our break. So you are listening to the Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your money is your creational energy. When you feed your wealth back into what you love, it signals your choices and returns to you. Tune in to Money Momentum with host Karen Baines and learn the truth about the widely misunderstood creative energy that is the cash in your pocket. Realign the things you can't see to get the results you can't. can see. Listen every month for a whole new hour on how to get the money already aligned to who you are. For more information on Karen and Money Momentum, visit soulwhispers.uk.
How many times do you find yourself saying, "It was nothing"? Next time someone tells you, "Great job," you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to Be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to Be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self. Check out her website, couragetobeseen.com, and listen to the first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. Pacific with host Sherry Clark. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
Have you lost a loved one and would desperately love a sign to prove that they are okay? Here's a tip for you. Be curious. Keep an open mind about everything. The proof will come from the most unlikely places. The messages promise to challenge your current beliefs and what you've been taught. Accept and appreciate all, no matter where they come from. I'm Angie Corbett Kuiper. I would love for you to share your signs from beyond on my closed Facebook page, Beyond Grief.
TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey everybody, we're back on the Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. I'm here with my guest, Deb Matlock, who is an environmental and humane educator and naturalist. So Deb, before the break, you know, I was just sharing this idea that a friend of mine shared years ago, which is never doubt that what's moving through you is a form of intelligence. And I think that really aligns with what you said, you know, what is it that makes us tick, right? What is our rhythm in the world? And what have you noticed about your own rhythm? And how has that changed how you live your life?
For me, my rhythm, I find it in nature in a few ways. I'm a bit of a hummingbird in that I like to flutter around from project to project. You know, my ideal, most productive kind of day is a day where I can just sort of be on my own time schedule and do 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. And at the same time, when I'm working on a very large project, I like to begin at some point and do something more like an earthquake, you know, where I spend 3 days and that's all I do. And I don't think about anything else, a different project or you know, social engagements or things like that. So I can see those rhythms that really help me to figure out what my productivity is. I also know in the fall, I start to feel a little bit more like I'm coming in and wanting to slow down and be more reflective. And by spring and summer, I'm ready to do more public workshops, more speaking, more out there kind of engagement. And no, my schedule isn't perfectly aligned to all of that, but by knowing those rhythms, it does help me my best to be sensitive to them and whenever possible, give myself the space for those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the things that I've noticed in myself is that, you know, I live, as mentioned, in the Boston area, where yes, we have real winter. and I find beginning of the year, like for me, the beginning, you know, January 1, January 2, like because it's a fresh new start to the year, I'm very energized. And, you know, and it's also usually a pretty heavy work time for me too, because I'm a consultant, you know, and companies like, okay, we're starting the year, right? They get getting things going, fresh new year for them.
Right.
Then, you know, of course there's a snowstorm or whatever, right? And everyone's schedule gets all messed up and people get all stressed and, you know, and we're in the Northeast. So people are very, you know, action oriented, right? And you know, we're supposed to still get places and do work and get to work and drive places and do, and there's public transportation too, but then there's a big storm and the subway gets stuck, you know, or whatever. So it's really interesting. Every year I notice this juxtaposition, right, of the rhythm of the weather and the rhythm of how we work. And the rhythm inside of me doesn't align with the rhythm of the weather, right? No, I have not yet figured out how to make this, like, you know, come together, but, it's interesting when you're in that, right? You know, you have your own rhythm, but you can't change, of course, the weather, right? You're in. So I'm just curious, you know, when you've worked with your clients on things like that, where their rhythm is out of alignment with maybe the other rhythms outside of themselves, you know, that they can't control.
Yeah, and I think that for most of us, that's the reality, is that we deal with a lot of rhythms that we can't control. And so that's where saying, okay, I'm not in alignment with this winter and this snowstorm. Do I, A, decide to move? B, if I stay here, what can I do? Mm-hmm. What can I do about my rhythms? Am I more productive than if I say, okay, 2 days a week I'm out, 3 days a week I'm working and I'm not going to meetings? Is there a way I can sort of schedule things in such a way that allows me to minimize how much I'm dealing with something, or to block, you know, this kind of goes back to what a lot of productivity people talk about with time blocking like tasks. Is there a way to block in the things that are out of my rhythm in a way that allows me bigger chunks of time that are in my rhythm? Even if it means staying home with a good book and a cup of tea and not dealing with the snow for a day, is there a way to create that space? And if not, okay, I've got to go out every day and this isn't right for me. Is there a way to just find the connections, find the beauty around you, find the joy in the moment, even though you're looking really forward to when spring and summer come? You know, finding the ice crystal designs on the windows as you walk by and things like that. Is there a way to find that deeper connection? And just sort of say, okay, I'm going to make the best of this.
And so it sounds to me like being mindful, right? And aware and notice, like if you're notice the crystals on the window, right? Things like that. And the beauty and perfection there. The other thing that, you know, we haven't touched on that I'm always curious about is how much courage does it take to honor our natural rhythms, right? To realize the interconnectedness we have with all the ecosystems on our planet. To understand the communities we're in, how much courage does it take in your experience?
That's a great question. I love putting it in the form of courage. I hadn't put that word on it before, but I think it takes quite a bit of courage. At the same time, it's very empowering to those around you. So when somebody says, hey, it's just not going to work for me. I've done enough today. I need downtime and I'm not going to go out to dinner tonight. And it's not that I don't love you all. I'd love to have dinner another time, but tonight I am going to go and sit at home with the dogs and cats and watch a movie. It's amazing how when we own our own rhythms and we speak and we kind of say, this is how I need it to be, people around us, I think, start to feel freed up to go, well, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. What do I need to do? Maybe I don't want to go to dinner either. You know?
Right. It does. You're right. And I think we forget that our expressions of courage can be really empowering to other people.
That is so true. And I know personally, I've been empowered by other people's expressions of courage. I mean, I've learned to follow my own rhythms better over the years by watching other people do that really well. Mentors of mine and people that I respect, how they operate their lives. And then I look at it and go, oh my gosh, look at what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they don't take speaking engagements in the winter because they don't want to do it then.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I could say, can we do this in April, right? Don't want to necessarily, February is not a great time for me, right? Et cetera. So yeah. There's something, and I think we get concerned that we'll get pushback, right?
I think sometimes there is pushback, and in some cases it's not appropriate. Some of our jobs, you know, we can't say let's wait till April, and we certainly can't tell our children and our animals that we're not going to do the things they need because of something that, but it's again, it goes back to that saying, all right, if I have to do all these things for this next week against my own rhythm, what do I need to do to bounce back?
Right.
For example, the conference where you and I met, which was a lovely conference. I really loved it and got a lot out of it. My rhythm is not one of heavy extroversion. So I knew for a few days after that, I needed to be more introverted. I needed not to have a whole bunch of other engagements for a couple of days.
Absolutely. And for me, it was less about the introversion, extroversion for me personally, and more about the sitting and listening is super hard for me.
Oh, right.
Right. So that is, I mean, you know, and that's just how conferences are, right? I mean, it is what it is, right? But how, you know, do I come for part of it? Do I stay? So I only came for part of it. And I had other reasons for doing that too, but that was sort of my, going with the same theme you just talked about, right? How was I going to take care of myself? Well, I'm going to be here for part of it and not all of it. Right. Yeah. Because it would be very, a conference needs to be absolutely, you know, I need to be riveted out of my mind for, you know, 2.5 days. Most conferences aren't at that, they're not because they're trying to meet so many people's needs and all of that. Right. So,
Exactly.
You know, you have to find your own rhythm within it. So speaking of rhythm, wow, our show and our time has flown by. Deb, I want to thank you so much for being here. Thank you very much for sharing your gifts with us today.
Oh, I so appreciate the invitation. This was a lot of fun. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. Absolutely. And thank you so much to listeners. We always have fun and a great time on this show. And look forward to seeing you again on the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern. So have a great couple of weeks, and we'll see you back here next time on The Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up.
You've been listening to the hit show, The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up, with Claudette Rowley. Tune in next time on TransformationTalkRadio.com for powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and move beyond the mindset of division. Each show, Claudette strikes right at the heart of the matter and looks past political squabbles, lack of humanity, and what she calls reality resistance. We just need the will. For more information about The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up, visit culturalbrilliance.com and join the cultural revolution. See you next time.